So tell me about the day. What happened on the morning of June 16th?
Well, in the morning, we know that the day was normal, you know. You know, there was no sign of anything. You know, it was just normal as we know. Usually wake up, wash yourself, have breakfast and go to school. You know, because I had to go outside first and check the coast, you know, like how is it outside, you know.
And what school was Hector at?
Hector was attending the same street where I was attending, but in a primary school. It's a Ping primary school. So that day, I think about 4 days, he slept at my mother's place because he would stay with whoever, either my granny or my mother. But I was always staying with my granny. But Hector would be on and off. So I went there to school, and my cousin also left. And, you know, on the way, when you look at the situation, it was just normal, just normal. Even when I got to school, you know, everything was just normal. And, you know, usually they would ring a bell and would gather to assembly and would sing and pray. So while we were praying, there was this big sound, disturbing sound, you know, that made one to be curious. And it was just like a flying machine, like it's constant, in, you know, on top of our heads. You know, it's not moving, it's not doing anything, but the sound was very disturbing. You know, as a kid, you close one eye and open the other to look around what's going on. Luckily, I was just opposite the gate. You know, the first thing that I saw there was a student from Morris Isaacson High School because I could identify them with their uniform. And, you know, I was a little bit excited, but because we were praying, you know, I had to hold myself. But when they got there, they were singing and chanting. You could see they are very, very happy. And, you know, like they were putting us in the mood, you know, even though we knew, yes, we were going to demonstrate. And my principal was much older. And he said, no, these are my kids and they're not going anywhere. And they said, old man, you had your chance. This is our chance. When, you know, we were like crooks, we knew about this, so we pretended as if we don't. But when they said, no, this is our chance, oh, we quickly threw our books, you know, in the corner, just dumped them there and took out our placards. And we joined the march. You know, but before we got out of the gate, we were briefed that we'll be only going to secondary schools, not these little ones, and we should behave ourselves, you know. That it was fun, you know, everybody was waving his hair placard, you know, singing with pride in the street of Soweto. And I think because Hector School was just before me, about two schools before we could reach Hector School. So I think because they saw masses of people passing and with different uniforms, that my brother attends there, my sister attends there, so we can invite ourselves, you know. But we never thought of that. Anyway, we marched until we came here in Orlando West, of which here in Orlando West, we came to one school that was called Orlando West High, where we would, you know, discuss about the memorandum, what to say and what not to say, and of which later would take it to Orlando Stadium. And from Orlando Police Station, we'll go to Orlando Stadium for future planning. Now that we demonstrated the response from the government, if it's not positive, what to do next? Well, we reached the school and already there were students, and we were told that before we could reach the school, we were summoned to wait. And then one of our leaders, Tsietsi Mashinini, told us that somebody tipped him that police are around next to the school. So, you know, like emphasizing that we must not provoke the police, otherwise the mission won't be fulfilled. We adhered to the rule. Yes, we passed the police next to the school, and because the school was closer to the police. And when we reached there, we were told that some of the school are still on the way. So we must just hang around and then we'll be summoned, you know, to come and discuss. Well, we waited there, you know, very anxiously and very happy. Okay, I was discussing something with my friends, you know, my colleagues from the class. Bang, there's a shot. You know, because we never thought of any shot or any violence. We ran amok in confusion, you know, hiding ourselves in the nearby houses, you know, very, very confused and scared, you know. And, you know, while I was in hiding, I never thought, why are we hiding? Yes, we heard the shot. What happened, you know? Anyway, I'm asking myself. No one can give me the answer. And by that time, police cars were riding in a high speed. Dogs were barking. You know, it was such a confusion. And later on, when it was calm, you know, we sneaked out from the hiding places, you know. And but now, you know, obviously we were shaken. I was thinking, there, what is really, really going on? And by the time when I'm thinking, you know, students were starting to emerge from different hiding places. And, you know, and like the situation was like a hide and seek. As soon as we hear the shot, we'd go into hiding. And when it's come, we'd emerge from hiding place. During that hide and seek, I saw my brother on the opposite side because I was at the corner, actually, and it was like a four-way street. So my brother was on the opposite side and same side with me. And I called him, hey, Solile, Hector. And, you know, he could see he heard somebody calling him. And he looked around. And as he looked in at my side, I just waved and he came close and he was very shy. And not smiling, a sheepish smile. I said, hey, I don't know what are you smiling about? Because it seems as if things are getting out of hand. You know, we cannot just every time when we hear shot go and hide. You know, I think we should do something. And just stay here next to me and I'll try and figure out something. How are we going to get home? You know, while I was talking to him, there was another shot. We went back into hiding. And as I emerged when it was come, Hector was not there. And I said to myself, no, maybe because he's still young, he's still hiding. The best thing is to wait here where I was talking with him so that when he emerges from the hiding, he will find me, yeah. Meanwhile, before me, there were students, you know, like gathering to a scene. I could not go there. I wanted to. I was very curious to go to, but I could not because I'm still waiting for him. You know, even the guy who carried him in Buisa, I saw him passing me. I just gave him one look because I was thinking very deeply. And, you know, I saw him going to the crowd and I was just, you know, I was in a wonderland. I was wondering. And when I look at the scene, I saw him there. And with the crowd, you know, the students, as if he's reaching or fetching something from them, you know, because he was very tall. And now, you know, I was anxious now. I looked harder. As he lifted, I could see the body frame. As he lifted higher, the first thing that I saw, it was Hector's shoe, because on that day he never wore school shoes. That means the distance was not very far. It's like I was here and he was right there at the door. You know, so by the time I ran to the scene, already Mbuisa was coming towards me because I was at the corner where we met and we ran along. And as I ran along with him, and on the way I was, you know, trying to make a point that this is my brother, you know, I've been waiting for him. Who are you? Can't you see his head? Because I saw blood coming from his mouth. And, you know, he just kept on running. And as we were running, heading, you know, to the clinic, even though then I did not know that the clinic is also nearby. A car just stopped in front of us, and the lady who got out of the car said she was one of the journalists, her name is Sophie Time, you know, and you know, they were with a Beetle, the Volkswagen with two doors. Already he opened the door, and I lifted the chair in from the back to front, and as Mbuisa was to put him in the car, he said, oh, he's finished, you know. There and then I understood that he's dead. You know, my mind just went blank. I could not think, I could not do anything, but I was crying. I was crying, you know. I couldn't understand, you know, and I was crying with anger. Then the lady said, no, we must just go to the clinic, you know, we'll find out from there. Offices was not even very far. When you got to the clinic, you know, doors were closed, windows, you know, everything was closed. And it was, to me, it was like a, it's a movie. I'm not part of it, but it's a movie. You know, I'm watching a movie. That movie is so emotional. And, you know, I had to go doors and windows knocking, crying out for help. Well, a white doctor came out and, you know, himself, he took Hector out of the car and said there was nothing more he could do. By the way, I knew that. You know, I became so numb, restless. You know, I could not think. My mind, my brains were not functioning. And two nurses, some nurses said to me, no, just sit down there. I could not sit. Instead, I went to the window. I'm telling you, outside, it was hell. You know, it was uncontrollable. You know, the situation was out of hand because most of the cars that passed, whether they are coming or going, they were stoned. And I just watched there. You know, it was like I'm in two pieces. You know, like I've got my shadow on the other side. This is me, but my part, the one that is functioning, is not working. I just stood there. And two ladies came and said they saw what happened and, you know, asked me if they could accompany me to go home, and on my behalf, they can say what happened. It was so hard to decide where to go, whether to my mother, whether to my granny. You know, I kept saying my mother. And now I'm changing. No, my granny. No, just like that. But eventually I said, no, we can go to my granny's. It was so hard to get home because most of the cars were being stoned. You know, because of anger, students were retaliating. But we did manage to go to my granny's. And my granny's, I've never seen my granny cry, but on that day I did. And now we had a bigger problem. How do we tell my mother? What do we do? Because my mother was not there staying with my granny. So we tried to phone some neighbors to leave the message so that if he comes home, they must give her the message. He got the message, and you know, when he comes very anxious. You know, I heard on the radio 11 o'clock news that kids are dead, police shot them, they were demonstrating. And I even commented, well, I wonder what's going to happen to our children, okay? And my uncles were already home, you know, and everybody was shying from her, did not want to look her in the eyes. And I said, when he got home, just, you know, from the gate he was talking, and he went inside the house. And my granny told her what happened. And I think she could not understand my granny. And she said, and Tiny too. You know, my other nickname is Tiny. They said, no, that one is okay. She's around, you know. But my mother never cried. She never cried. I could not understand why, you know. And later, as years passed, I said, why didn't you cry? Because most of the people, when they lost one of their family members, usually they cry. And he said, I think it's like blocking the real pain. And she said she took the incident as if she was with Hector, and they parted ways. And as they parted ways, Hector was knocked down by a car and killed, and it killed him. Just like that. And what's the use of crying? Okay? Living and dying is a challenge. You know, whether you cry or not, that person won't ever come back. You know, I couldn't understand that. To me, it was like it's hard, you know. But as, you know, I grew, this grew inside me. It made me strong. Today, I can share the story without even feeling any anger or pain. I just tell myself, I have forgiven and I know, but I won't forget. You know, this is, it's part of me. You know, I cannot run away from it. You know, but at the same time, I want to proceed in life. Okay, yes, these things happen. Yes, death is there. No one can stop it. You know, it's there. Whether it doesn't matter how you die, but it's there. We are all going to die. So if we look forward, yes, we may cry and feel pain, but obviously, but those who are left should go on with their lives.
Do you remember the photograph being taken? Do you have any memory of the photographer?
Unfortunately, no. You remember I said the car just stopped and the lady said he was one of the journalists. And, you know, I think I saw the lady and the driver and as the three of us. That was it. And the car. That was it. Maybe I saw that, but no, I don't recall. Even though I was miserable, but I don't recall like somebody swiftly passing. No, I don't recall. I don't want to tell a lie. But later, as I was thinking about that lady, maybe she was the journalist and one was the photographer, and the photographer maybe was left somewhere because of he should take photos, something like that, you know, because I never saw anybody besides us.
What do you feel about the photograph?
Well, usually I would look at, because most of the people do ask me that questions, and usually I would say, I always look at the picture and say, this is not me. I am not one of those people in that picture. And I know about the story, or I've read the book, or somebody told me about this, you know. Or I've seen that in the movie. It's not me. This is not part of me. In that way, I can relate, you know.
Why do you feel that way? Just...
Yeah, I think I don't want to take myself back there, you know, because that was stressful, very traumatic, you know. So I'm trying to, that's another way of trying to heal myself. You know, no wonder I know that the photo itself have changed my life. Okay, I'm living the life of the photo now, because every time I will be asked about the photo, you know.
How has the photo changed your life?
Well, like today I'm sharing the story. Usually I am, you know, like going to schools. You know, so many people invite me to give the talk. And some of the talks that I'm giving, if a person approaches me and tell me that he wants me to go and share with students or business people, you know, usually they would brief me, why is it necessary for me to go and talk? It's like I'm motivating people in a way. Like if they are business people, they would say, people should know where we come from and where are we today. And they are in business because they want our country to be like one of the top countries in business. So it's like motivating. Where do we come from and where are we going to? So it's motivating, even for the kids also.
Do you think the experience has made life difficult for you psychologically?
Yeah, because I always think, you know, I am strong. Okay, I always feel like I'm strong because I'm talking, yes. But when I sit down and relax, that's where I feel the tension. Because at the same time, by the way, I fake what I'm seeing at the photo. I've put something extra to make it, it's like something that it's not serious, so that it may not hurt me. So that means in that way, I am suppressing my emotions and feelings. But at the end of the day, I must release that. You know, so it's so hard. It's so hard. I'm trying by all means to share with people the story, but I'm always trying my best to say, okay, I don't want that when I talk to people, I should feel emotional. Obviously, I'm not going to finish what I've started, you know, like talking to people. Obviously, when I cry, people say, no, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. You know, I do love to share the story. No wonder I have to find ways to finish, like, telling the story up to the end.
Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about Hector? What kind of child was he? What do you remember about Hector?
I always laugh first, and I feel like laughing. I always do. Hector was a boy, and the only boy in my mother's family. Others, we were six, and Hector died on the 16th of June, and the last one was killed in a car accident in 1997, and she was 14. So Hector was, you know boys are naughty, but not the kind of person that would cause problems outside, and at the end of the day, you find one parent coming accusing Hector of something. No, no. And I'm telling you, Hector loved my mother so much. He loved my mother, you know, he would do anything for my mother. And Hector was a kind of a child that listened very. You know, if you give him instructions, like in the olden days when you were sent to the shop, they would say, spit the saliva on the stoop where it's very hot. They know within seconds it will be dry. And they say, if this dries and you are not back here, I'm going to give you a hiding. I'm telling you, Hector would beat that record. He would always beat that record. You know, he liked to be sent, like going to the shops, to send, you know, wherever. She was so handy. She was very, very handy, you know. Even though he was not just like other boys, but you know, you'd never hear complaints about him. And to me, it's like he was very cunning because he was shy, and you just give him money to go to the movies to watch Bruce Lee. Oh, I'm telling you, he will love you.
Was he political? Did he have any thoughts about the politics? Or?
Nah, I think it's curiosity that sent him, really, because he was still small. And by the way, at home, we were not political, we were religious people. So I think it's out of curiosity, you know, how kids are like, you know, that, oh, our neighbor schools are going on a march and they don't invite us, you know. And besides, the uniform tells a story. He knew that I'm attending that blue and turquoise blue. That's my school. Morris, it's navy blue, yellow and red, you know. So he knew those colors. These are my neighbors. Why didn't they invite me? I think I should invite myself. You know,
what do you feel? I mean, it's a hard question about the political impact of, because obviously lots of people died then, mm-hmm. but because of the photograph,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
that death and your story has become the one everybody knows.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the political impact of the photograph?
Well, this has taught me something. Whether you are known or not known, or whether you are well known or not, you know, at the end of the day, even ordinary people, I mustn't even say ordinary, even. You know, ordinary people can change the lives of the other people who are well-known, who have played major roles in a different forms. You know, it shows that if you are a human being, you can do the best for other people. It doesn't matter who you are and how small you are. You know, because by hectare participating, even though he did not know anything. It's a pity because we never reach the night of the day. Otherwise, we would have, shared with him why were we demonstrating, you know. But I think he felt right because we are there. My sisters are there. My cousin is there. Why should I not join, you know? Yeah, so I feel she felt she should be there. Why did you join the march?
And, you know, I've heard some people say that that photograph was the beginning of the end of apartheid.
Yeah, we call it that way, and we also say it was the turning point of the all South Africans. It made such an impact, you know. I think I was stereotyped. I never thought that outside South Africa people knew what was happening, you know. Maybe it's because I was stereotyped and I was still young to understand the politics, you know. But it made other countries understand apartheid. Maybe yes, they knew about apartheid, but they never understood apartheid because they were not living here. And even part of the news or from TV, they would be sanctioned, you know, like this part it mustn't be shown, or like we used to call it propaganda. Yeah. So, but this one shows the reality of the oppression that people were in, you know, because if children are killed, are those people meant? Can you really kill children? That means it was now the unfolding of the apartheid. What is really, really happening, and why are we calling that apartheid, you know? So it made so many countries, so many people aware that obviously apartheid was not good, it was evil, but they knew about that. But now the incident made it more powerful, more understandable.
What do you think for the future? What do you think this photograph, Hector's life, Hector's death, what does it mean for the future of South Africa?
Well, I always say those who died did not die in vain. You know, like we are in the milestone. We never ruled anyone. So this, to us, it's new. Obviously, we are going to have some hiccups there and there before we go straight, you know, before we get to the real thing. So we are in that process, and I'm heading and hoping for the best. Obviously, if we come together, as we did in the 1976 uprising, you know, masses and masses of people were there, and we were singing one song. So if we do, even in changing our country, in this new South Africa, coming together, working together, I'm telling you, we'll be called with, yes, it will be South Africa, but, you know, we'll be up there like the best country, you know. I'd like to thank people who supported us during, you know, the uprisings. Like, you know, we also had sanctions, you know. They really did a great job. I'm telling you. So we always, even when tourists come here, to me, it's like they are still supporting us after what happened. They have been and they are still. Even in the new South Africa, they're also helping us, you know, to go this path. You know, because by visiting and coming to see what's after the apartheid, how people are like, what are the changes? To me, it's a big step. You know, they're still supporting us even today.
Can you tell me about the other person in the picture?
Oh, Mbuisa. Actually, Mbuisa, because of the picture, he had to go to exile because police were harassing him. And he went to Botswana. And as a refugee in Botswana, he had a scholarship to, like the way refugees were giving scholarships. So he chose to go to Nigeria, where he went to school, actually. And, you know, the last letter that he wrote his mother was in 1978, saying he was in and out of the hospital because of malaria. That was the last letter. But rumors say, yes, he was mentally disturbed. And, you know, I understood that because Hector died in his hands. But because of malaria also, you know, it got into him and, you know, obviously he become mentally disturbed. So it's still a question mark, unfortunately, and it's a pity. Because that was the first and the last time I saw him.
If you saw him today, what would your message to him be?
It would be so difficult because we have, can you imagine, from 76 up to now, you must cover from 20, all the 29th. It will be so much to say. It will be, I even don't have a clue, but I think there would be so much to say, you know. Because on the other hand, I still thank him, even though he's not around, but I still thank him. He did this like with love and brotherly love, you know, because in our culture, it doesn't matter whether you know that person or not. If you see somebody collapsing or needed aid, you don't have to ask or questions. You just pick or help. That's it. You know, that's how we are.